Final hour of a fast-moving Saturday show. Chris Thomas, Turtle, with you till the top of the hour. Atlanta United pregame comes your way then. They are in League's Cup action. First leg did not go the way that they wanted it to. We'll see if they can rebound tonight. Coverage starts again at the top of the hour with kick at 9 o'clock. E, before we get into this list of 2026 Pro Football Hall of Fame candidates, we're going to play a little game. First round, they'll get in, or they ain't making it. We got three options to choose for. We got 12 guys to choose from. Is your significant other a big social media post for you to do to celebrate her type of gal?
I mean, like, us saying, oh, we went to this, us saying we went to that. Well, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Or like, so yeah, the reason I'm asking.
Okay.
Yesterday was National Girlfriend's Day.
Was it?
Yes.
Mm.
So.
Missed that one.
This may be leaning towards your answer here.
Yeah.
And, you know, my girlfriend doesn't make me do anything.
Right.
But I know her. And she.
Appreciates things like that.
Enjoys being acknowledged. So yes. I made a nice little post on my Instagram.
Right.
Acknowledging her and. You know, it's actually coming up on our one-year anniversary at the end of the month.
Wow.
So I'll be making a separate post for that. So is your significant other, like, you know, National Girlfriend Day or her birthday or your anniversary, is she somebody that appreciates you acknowledging her publicly on social media?
I don't know about the publicly part, but, like this – so what's the date? Saturday? Like, Wednesday, I send flowers to her job just because. Okay? Fellas. Not Valentine's Day, not birthday, just because. You want to get some points? Just because.
And she like free money.
It's like free money. And she texts me a picture. She's like, oh, you just made my day. I'm like, yes, I knew I would. I think, you know, you can't forget big things, but put it on social media. She's not a big deal about that. She rather post when we go to a special event. Like, oh, we're at Beyonce. Oh, we're at whatever. And then we'll put a post to that. But no, not recognizing her birthday on social media. Just don't forget it is the big
deal. So it's not an incomplete day if you don't put out a special post.
Nope. Because her and I both talk about, well, we remember there wasn't no social media. We remember when we had flip phones. We remember when, you know, Chris, you won't remember this one. Hey, baby, let me get them 7 digits.
Oh, the beeper?
Well, just period.
Oh,
phone
yeah.
numbers just had 7 digits. There wasn't no area code. Let me get them 7 digits. So, you know. I'm a little older than you.
yeah, but listen, that doesn't preclude, you know, I see some of the older ladies and gentlemen in my life.
Yeah,
I'm talking 60s, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, my mom's birthday is in 2 weeks. Her birthday is August 13th. She's in her late 70s. She's in her late 70s, and she'll straight be on Facebook talking about happy birthday to me, and yeah, no, we'll put something,
so
we'll put something on the family.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. It just depends. Fellas, ladies, let me know. Hit me up at CT Tonight 929. That's the Twitter page, at CT Tonight 929. Do you, if you're the lady, or if you're the fella, does your lady like you to shout them out on important days, holidays, birthdays, National Girlfriend Day. So I'm getting back into the swing of things of having to do that again. The 1 year anniversary is coming up in later on this month. So we'll be having to pull out all the stops for that. But for this one, it was interesting. I took it upon myself. I tagged her in it. I put a song on it. She's like taught me how to do the post correctly, in air quotes. You can't just post anymore. There's got to be a song.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be multiple pictures.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a filter. There's got to be camouflage. There's got to be all these sepia, all these settings that you got
to
go through.
Well, you're qualified to be a social media, you know, 929 The Game, social media, whatever we need around here. That's your new title.
Well, Odyssey, what's up?
Yeah. I mean, you got enough titles.
I can take
anyway.
Extra responsibility.
Hold on, man. You got Chris Thomas and I. You got Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. There's only so many hours a day, Chris
Well,
Thomas.
You're right about that. All right, let's play. Would you like to play? Game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the rundown like, what's he talking about? I didn't see this.
I just saw this.
Okay, let's do it. I like it.
So here we go. The 2026 Pro Football Hall of Fame candidates. This is per Fox NFL. We're going to play a game here. There's 12 people on the list. We're going to go first ballot. We're going to go they make it, or we're going to go they don't make it at all. We got three options to choose from for each one. Okay, here we go. Let's start off. With, I think this is a fairly easy one, Drew Brees. is eligible in 2026. E, first ballot, he makes it or he doesn't make it.
Super Bowl champion, and I do believe he is the all-time leading passer in NFL history. First ballot.
I think Brady caught him.
Did Brady catch him? Well, when he retired,
yeah.
He was, yeah, first yeah. ballot.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think Drew Brees is a first ballot as well. Like so many of these guys, they only got one. You know, if Rodgers doesn't get another one, another guy on this list didn't get one, but he's probably still going to go in.
Yeah, so Drew, I think I know what that guy is, but go ahead.
Drew Brees, yeah. I agree with you, is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah. You know what the thing is? Drew Brees, even though his numbers are gaudy and he won a lot, he would get in on the sentimental. What Drew Brees did for the city of New Orleans post-Katrina, I mean – that franchise might have folded. Who knows? They could have been. That we might be talking about the pick a town. I don't know, the Kansas City, Iowa, the Des Moines Saints or something like that.
Exactly.
So crazy. Yeah, first ballot all the way.
Larry Fitzgerald.
We're 2 for 2 on this one.
Yeah.
So I do know for a fact he is second all time behind Jerry in catches and I think yards. I know he's second in catches. T.O. still might be second in yards, but he's second in catches behind Jerry. Played a gazillion years off of the same team. Go figure that. Shame he never got a ring. Shame. He never ring. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't ring chase. A lot of people thought he would ring chase over those last couple of years, but he never did.
That damn James Harrison returned for a touchdown, man.
Yeah, the Steelers did it to him.
Screwed him over.
Still first ballot.
I agree. First ballot Hall of Famer. Again, if you're just tuning in, we're going over the 2026 Hall of Fame candidates. Either first ballot, they'll get in, or they ain't getting in. Those are our three choices today. Next one, Jason Witten.
Cowboys tight end. Yeah. Now a coach, either on a high school or small college.
Broadcasting thing sure didn't work out.
Yeah, you ain't going in that wing of the Hall of Fame. He gets in. I don't think he's the first ballot, though.
We're on the same page again. I think he does get in. He's probably the best tight end of the 2010s.
Tony was a little
2000s.
I would have to see who else he played against.
Yeah.
Because
Antonio Gates,
who's in today. I think the problem is he's going to be – his numbers are gaudy, but he's going to be lumped in that Cowboys haven't won a Super Bowl for 30 years stigma, and he was a system guy. He's liked. All the media people love him, so he'll get in eventually because of that, but I don't think he's Hall of First ballot, especially with the guys he's on the list with so far.
Frank Gore is up next. This is definitely the hardest one so far. I think he's third all-time in rushing.
Because he played for a long time.
Forever. Is he a compiler?
Yes, he is. However, one of the first guys I met in this business, really nice guy, helped me out. Played for the Jets. Got in a couple years ago. Running back.
Curtis Martin.
Thank you, Curtis Martin. He was a compiler, and he got in. So I say, once again, not first ballot, but he gets in eventually.
I agree. We're 4 for 4. I think he gets in, but he's got to wait a couple of years.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He'll get in a year where it's a little lighter.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that'll be him. All right. Up next, Julian Edelman. Now, let me just, before you say no automatically, let me throw something out there. He was a Super Bowl MVP.
Do we really want to talk about that?
I'm just saying.
Wasn't that the one?
That was the 10-7 game. Yeah, it was. But he was a Super Bowl MVP. I'm just saying.
Quarterback or lacrosse player? Which one was he?
That's Chris Hogan.
Okay, he was the quarterback, right? Division III quarterback?
Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
Chris Hogan was the lacrosse player.
I'm going to tell you why I say he does not get in. Wes Welker's not in. I can name a whole bunch of Super Bowl MVPs, okay? From Albany, Georgia, by the way of Louisville, Deion Branch is a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
He's not in.
What about Dexter Pittman?
Don't even know who that is. He's next on the list?
No. Wasn't he the Super Bowl MVP?
Dexter Jackson with from the Cowboys, yeah. Well, yeah, then he signed a big –
No. He was the Super Bowl MVP with the Bucks,
and then he signed that big free agent contract. I just don't see it. Short career. I mean, he played that slot New England receiver role to a great, but so did Wes Welker.
He only had 1,000 yards in the season 3 times.
Thank you.
Yeah, no.
Like I said, nope, don't get it.
I'm going to say no as well.
Yep.
Just the numbers just aren't there. Only 36 touchdowns for his career. That's not.
That's not even a Hall of Very good.
No. Yeah, sorry, Jules, even though you have the Super Bowl MVP. Greg Olsen up next.
Tight end, media guy. No, he doesn't get in.
I don't think so either.
Nope.
I don't think he's good enough.
That great Miami factory, they were the original tight end you.
Yeah.
Had a great career. I think he's much better as a broadcaster. I mean, Brady gave him the boot, but he's much better as a broadcaster.
He made the Super Bowl with Cam.
Did he? Yeah. You know, just because he played in it. No, definitely not.
All right, next up, Shady McCoy.
Wow. For 3 years, Shady was the best all-around running back in the NFL.
Yeah.
Injuries shortened his career. He never won a Super Bowl. You know, he played for Big Red in Philly, and he played for Buffalo. Shady does not get in.
I'm looking at it right now. He's got 73 career touchdowns. 11,
which is a big number. Wow.
11,000 yards. He averaged 4.5 yards a carry for his career.
And that 11,000, that's all purpose, is just his rushing yards.
That's rushing. Receiving, he's got another 4,000. And those, another 16 touchdowns.
Okay.
So he's got close to 100 touchdowns.
Those numbers maybe sway me a little bit more to the eventually. He's definitely not first ballot. Shady's not first ballot.
He may get in, though.
I love what he's doing in his media career. He's another one that's having a really good media career.
Yeah. Well, he just got fired, unfortunately.
Did he?
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
his
Shady.
Fox show got so Fox Sports
canceled a lot of people.
Canceled three of their shows.
Joy.
Yeah, she gone.
You need the show to cry on, Joy? Hit your boy up on social media. Oh, I'm supposed to be in the clear show, right?
Yeah. We started the segment talking about your National Girlfriend
Day. Look, you know what?
Day.
We all have
Hall Pass.
Thank you, Star Hall Passes.
Not your and, Hall Pass.
And Joy, and what's my girl from First Take?
Oh, Molly Carroll.
Thank you.
Yeah, those are your Hall Passes.
Lord Jesus.
That's please, you know what?
Hey, The Rock, I hope you're not bumping into my girlfriend today.
You know what's funny?
What?
I did not think I would leave the show today knowing who your Hall Pass candidates were.
Andy Randy? What did we learn today?
Yeah.
I can't. I hope my. Please don't bump into Dwayne Johnson today.
Things I learned.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we got a couple more here going over again. The 2026 Hall of Fame candidates lock first ballot. They'll get in eventually or not at all. Dez Bryant.
Not at all.
I don't
throw
think
the X up, but you're not getting in.
Maybe if he caught it.
You're right, because he dropped a few big ones.
This next one's really interesting, and you have to sort of be a little bit of a football nerd. Marquise Pouncey, center.
The Miami Dolphins or which one was the Steelers?
Steelers.
The Steelers. He gets in.
I think he does.
He
too.
Gets in. He was the best center in football.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, probably 10 years. What was his twin name? Marquise and – I can't remember. But how many people remember he's a twin, you know?
Yeah.
Twin brother played for the Dolphins. Yeah, no, but the Steelers won. Yes, absolutely.
It's Marcus.
I think so. Marcus, yeah. Marcus, and I want to say he got two rings with the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken.
I think at least one.
Yeah, well, he definitely got one. He definitely got one, but I think he got one with Ben and definitely
one. Ben has two.
Ben, I think he might have got both with Ben then. I think he might have got both with Ben. Look that up. I don't know. But he's in.
He's in.
But is he first ballot? I don't know about first ballot, but he's getting in.
Yeah, I think he's getting in, too.
Yeah.
You want to know something crazy?
Talk to me.
Made the Pro Bowl every year of his career.
Definitely in.
Yeah.
Definitely
that's,
in.
That's crazy.
There it is.
Nine-time Pro Bowler. Phillip Rivers.
He's getting in. And I even say he's first ballot.
You think Phillip Rivers is first ballot?
I think Phillip Rivers is first ballot.
Just for managing 15 kids while being a... All right,
coaching and throwing and playing on bad knees. Yeah, I think he's
first-time Pro Bowler. He has 421 touchdowns, 63,000 yards, 65 career percentage.
Mm-hmm. I don't care that he doesn't have a ring. I take him first ballot over Eli, and that's the same draft. I take him first. Big Ben probably is the best of that draft, but I take him first ballot over Eli.
These in the final two are interesting, too. Steven Gostkowski. Super
the kicker.
Bowl kicker for the Patriots.
Gets in that first
I think
ballot.
He gets in.
Gets
too.
In
yeah,
that first
I mean,
ballot.
If not him from that generation.
Yeah. He was the clutchest kicker of that generation. Ooh. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Then the final one, standout defensive tackle for the Bengals, Geno Atkins.
Former Georgia Bulldog, which a lot of people do not remember because he didn't have an all-SEC career at Georgia. For maybe 3 or 4 years was a all-pro defensive tackle. At one time was the gold standard of defensive tackles when he was playing.
8-time Pro Bowl, mm-hmm. 2-time All-Pro, Hall of Fame, All-2010 team. He has 75 career sacks.
Yeah, Geno was kicking butt in Cincinnati. Like I said, out of University of Georgia, not first ballot.
He gets in?
No, he doesn't
get in. No, he doesn't. He falls a little bit short.
He falls a little bit short.
Well, Will Fork will get in if he's not already, right?
Vince?
Is he in?
I'm not sure, but he should. I mean, he's got all three. He's got. Yeah. He was a part of the first three rings with the Pats. So,
if Will Fork, who are the other defensive tackles that are going to get in from this generation? Who's the guy on the Eagles that just retired? Brandon Graham? Is he getting in?
Probably, but he's got 5 years to wait. I mean,
because he got two Super Bowls.
Yeah. Well, we all know Glenn's getting in.
Aaron Donald, you mean?
Yeah, Aaron Donald. Thank you. He's getting in.
Yeah.
I still don't think I think a part of it is Geno played in Cincinnati. He was really good in Cincinnati, but he wasn't on a real big market team.
Vita Vea get in?
No. I don't think so. I think he spent most of his career injured, even though he's got the ring with the Bucks. He didn't really just dominate the way a lot of people thought he would.
Yeah.
But he's still got a couple years left. We'll see.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Good job.
Great names. Yeah, I got to go look at this list.
That was a really good list. All right. When we get back, I had a chance to catch up with D. Orlando Ledbetter a couple of days ago. Wanted to bring back that conversation for you because he was hysterical. Drake London shouted him out on the field. What was his response to that? You'll hear that and a whole lot more as we get a boots on the ground report from D-Led coming up next. Let's waste no time. Head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our special guest, D. Orlando Ledbetter. D-Led, make sure you check out his work in the AJC, especially this time of year when you get all of the Falcons training camp reports. D, how did it feel today when Drake London made it known that he was listening to you, my friend, and he shouted you out on the sideline?
Hey, you know, I was cool, man. You know, me and Drake are good. He said, report that stuff, D-Led, because I reported his two drops and his two fumbles the other day. So when he made a great catch, he wanted to make sure I reported that also. That seems fair to me.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny moment there on the sideline. And it helps transition into the main topic I want to talk to you about tonight, and that is this discussion of a physicality, of a presence, of an edge that guys like James Pierce Jr. are setting the tone for the team. You've been covering this team a long time, D. Has this been one of the more physical camps that you remember?
Not really, but, you know, you got to go all the way back to Harvey Dahl and Tyson Clavo, you know, the lineman that, you know, they I talked to some of the old guys. They were like, hey, yeah, sometimes that was they just did that to get us a break. know, under Coach Smith and so forth. So, but it hasn't been that physical because, I mean, it's not two-a-days. They're not as short. Yeah, we had a couple fights, but and they went through halfway through the pass today. So, as far as bone crushing, pop hitting, and stuff like that, you know, it's just a different day and time. But we did have a couple fights, and we haven't had them in a while, so that part of it was good to see.
Did you like to see the edge from the rookie James Pierce Jr. getting in the mix early? He's been causing a little bit of buzz around camp.
Oh yeah, no doubt, because you know, he was going a little faster than the veterans wanted him to go this early in camp, you know. But he's trying to show people he's legit, you know, first round guy. And so, you know, the linemen didn't, you know, they don't take too kindly to the rookie trying to show him up there on the first couple practices. So, you know, they let him know that. And you know, he was cool about it. Leonard Floyd helped him out. He's got to learn how to practice as a pro is what they were trying to teach him. That was the lesson there. You can still go hard and fast, but you know, you ain't got to really, you know, jack your teammates, lift them up in the air and all that kind of extra stuff. Some of that was going on. So, you know, a little bit of both. They got an understanding now and look like today had a new kind of flow to it.
When you talk about Leonard Floyd, the vet coming in to help the edge rush, any reason not to believe he won't get his, you know, 8-9 sacks that he usually does?
Yeah, he's done a good job late in his career. You know, he was a high draft pick. But, you know, something happened when he didn't get renewed in Chicago. And ever since then, he's been one of the better pass rushers in the league. So I expect that to continue. And, you know, we'll see if he can match that here in Atlanta.
Talk to us about this kicking battle, D. It seems like both guys are taking it very seriously and both have had strong outings so far.
Yeah, no doubt. Certainly the first day, Craig won that clearly hands down. The ball was booming off of his foot. And then today, Koo had a little bit more pop in his kicks. He had some nice, pretty end-over-end kicks. But both of them missed from 54, which, you know, you need that to be kind of automatic, you know, for your 54 and 55. So, but, you know, there, you know, some technical points. Craig's a little bit further back on his kicks because they take off a little bit lower, which, you know, might be a problem in the NFL. We'll look at that in the exhibition season if he can get his kicks up over the line. But he certainly got some power behind it. And we'll, you know, just keep an eye on that, you know, in that matchup there. But, yeah, he won the first day, and we'll call the second one a draw.
Talking about things to keep an eye on as we're chatting with our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter, make sure you check out his camp reports in the AJC. Anything to glean from Jalen Walker missing a couple of days?
The position coach says he's losing reps. He needs reps. He's learning a new position. And so, you know, but help is, you know, important. They won't say he's injured. They're saying that he's working on something on his body. So I don't know what the – I looked over there. I couldn't tell what they were trying to work on, you know, footwork or upper body or agility or, you know, whatever. But something happened after the second practice, and he's been, you know, he's been working through some stuff and trying to get back onto the field.
How's it been watching Kyle Pitts ramp back up?
Yeah, he's getting some moderated practice time. You can tell he's trying really hard. You know, he's going full speed the whole time, which, you know, we can't say that's been the case for him at all times. And, you know, just building up after not having much going on the off season with him as they protected him for the foot injury he had. So just, you know, you kind of got to be hopeful for him, you know, if you, you know, want to see him do bit better. He certainly seems to be on his path along the way, you know. But, yeah, it's a wild off. We got a long offseason to go here.
Everyone's been obviously so praising Bijan Robinson. D, is it possible he's looking even better than he has?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It's no hesitation in what he wants to do. And I've seen enough. I don't want him cutting out there anymore. I don't want him spinning on people and, yeah, you know, doing the double cuts, jump cuts. Yeah, he's got to get ready, but I don't want him. I don't save some of that for me for September the 7th.
We got a couple of weeks to figure it out. We did hear from Kirk Cousins the other day. Raheem usually doesn't play anybody in the preseason that may play in the regular season, including a backup quarterback due to injury. You think he's going to get any run in the preseason?
Yeah, he'll get probably, I'm just going off of last year, and Penix is 24 snaps. You got maybe get Kurt that 24 and keep it moving in this Detroit game, the first game, and then just shut him down and get ready for the regular season, get him a couple snaps there in the joint practices and so forth. His plan worked last year. They got off, you know, the Pittsburgh game wasn't worth much, but then after that, you know, they got rolling there. And so whatever, you know, Raheem did last year, he needs to keep and do that again because he's got another tough schedule here to open the season with.
Arthur Blank, owner and chairman, spoke with our good buddy Steve Weishti over the weekend. He wouldn't lay out playoff demands or expectations, but acknowledged that, you know, time is running out here to get things turned around. Do you think there is an internal expectation, maybe even an unspoken one, between upper management?
Yeah, he spoke to us too, local media, and Ken Segura wrote a nice column about, you know, he just kind of went right down the middle about his expectations. He said the same thing in 22, said the same thing in 23, but he didn't say, you know, playoffs are bust or heads are going to roll, you know. But given what's happened in the past, when expectations have not been met, there's usually some changes in Flowery Branch. So, you know, he holds folks accountable. Even the year when they were the number one seed and got blew out to the Packers, he blew out the coordinators. You know, so he's not a stand pat guy when you don't do absolutely well. That wasn't how he operated in Home Depot, and that's not how he operates with the Falcons. So anything short of you know, not getting to the playoffs, you know, you probably need to win the division too. But if you do one of those, and if you do both of them, then everybody's going to be in pretty good stead.
When it comes to a couple of more rookies, we were talking about Pierce and Walker earlier. Looks like Xavier Watts was getting in with the ones a little bit. What did you see from him?
Yeah, not much from him. He hasn't impressed me much. I've been focusing more on Fuller. You know, he's in position. You know, you can't really blow stuff back at safety when you're tagging people out. I mean, it's gym class hero type stuff. So we'll see how he does in live actions in the games and in the joint practices. But, you know, we know what he can do. We saw him play at Notre Dame. He's getting acclimated to the NFL. Jesse said he knows what to do. Now he's just taking it to the field. So he's a pretty sharp football player. But, yeah, I don't – you know, people start making grand conclusions off of them playing tag at practice right now. I kind of try to stay away from that until we get some real football. But, yeah, he looks great playing tag right now. He's a pro athlete. Most of them do look great out there playing tag because that's what it is, not football. But, yeah, he's coming along.
To that same effect, the nickelback spot looks like D. Alford is getting the reps with the ones. Is Billy Bowman, you think, still in the mix?
Yeah, he's still in the mix. You know, they got to be slow with that. That's a position change. So, you know, D's probably kind of showing them, you know, how to do it, you know, and he should be picking up some stuff from D. D knows where he's supposed to be and who he's supposed to cover and the assignments and stuff like that. So that's why he's ahead of Bowman at Bowman at this juncture. But they'll start ramping him up and getting him in there more. He'll get some reps against the twos and threes and, you know, you know, as he gets ready for a new position, at some point they'll have to throw him out there and see what he can do against some talent. But right now it seems like they're letting him learn, you know, how that position is played at the National Football League level.
I guess it's usually a good thing when we've gone this long and haven't talked about it. It seems like all was well, at least early on, with Caleb McGarry being the protector for Penix.
Yeah, that's not – see, they're not looking at it as that because they're in the pistol and they're, you know, in the shotgun. So they're like, he's not a blindside tackle. But I'm like, I don't believe that because when he turns his back, he's the blindside tackle. So, you know, Caleb has struggled against elite speed. So, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. But, you know, they think because of formationally, you know, it's not a blindside, so to speak. You know, if you're under center a lot, then yeah. But, I mean, they're going to be running 11 out of shotgun and pistol. And so Zach Robinson and Raheem don't look at him as a blindside tackle, and neither does Ledford. So I don't know where everybody's – I know where it's come from because I've been harping on it too. I'm like, if he's the blindside tackle, you probably got issues. But they plan to attack straight ahead out of the pistol and the shotgun, and that's they believe that minimizes that whole old concept of the blindside tackle.
All right, fair enough. Well, with that said, how has Neusel looked? Has he been adjusting as the starter just fine?
Yeah, he's just fine. You know, you see him climbing. You see him on his double teams and getting to the second level, which is what he did, you know, last year. He's laterally. He can get inside and out. I want to see him in one-on-one in the bull rushes. Kurt said he can anchor, and he said he said that's the best thing to a quarterback is that, hey, if that center can anchor up the middle and control the bull rush, you know, then you are, you know, you got time to look down the field. You're not going to be, you know, worried about anybody coming up through there. So they said he can do that. He's doing that well in practice thus far, and we'll get to see him against some pretty good tackles there from Tennessee when they come to town.
Great stuff, D. Appreciate the time, as always. We'll check you out in the AJC, and we'll talk soon.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Turtle. Have a great evening.
All right, that is our good buddy there, D. Orlando Ledbetter. Yeah, that was funny. Drake London shouting him out on the sidelines. Come on, D! Put that in your column. Love it. It has been an interesting couple of days at Flowery Branch. Again, Penix not exactly lighting the world on fire, but that's okay. Rather him do that now than in any sort of games or anything coming up. James Pierce Jr. continues to dominate in all the other headlines that we covered with D as well as Joe Patrick earlier in the program. All right, when we get back, we'll wrap up shop, let you hear more of what the guys had to say out at Flowery Branch this week as we finish up a Saturday program. Abe Gordon and Madison are in the building to take over for the five-stripe countdown, and then Mike Conti and Jason Longshore will have Atlanta United action. Don't go anywhere. Busy, busy Saturday evening for you right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, it was supposed to be a party at Bristol Motor Speedway. It's not, for a couple of reasons. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle, last chance for romance here. Abe Gordon's in the hizzy. Coming up next, 4-5 Stripes Countdown. And then the Atlanta United squad will take on their latest opponent in League's Cup. Try to get some revenge after a tough 3-1 loss on Wednesday. E, what if I told you the game is in a weather delay? To start right now. It's so fitting based on what we talked about. Yeah, it is. It is under a weather delay.
But, I was out in the bullpen and this was on the TV out there, and I saw all the grand marshals and all the country stars. I mean, they did a shindig. It was definitely a hum-digging shindig. Good time to be there. Like I said, it was a party for sure.
Yeah, rooting, tooting, good time. Yeah. And then they had to suspend play before it even starts.
Yeah, well,
that if that's not a cherry on top for the Braves season, I don't know what is, man. We opened the show talking about this. Again, today was supposed to be a showcase. Today was supposed to be all eyes on Bristol Motor Speedway and the Atlanta Braves, a team that has been one of the best, not only in the NL, but all of baseball, winning a World Series a couple of years ago, perennial playoff team, young talent all across the board. And today was supposed to be a showcase. And quite frankly, based on early season projections, it was supposed to be probably a Braves beatdown. And it's not. Couldn't be anything further from that right now. The Braves are closer to 20 games under 500 right now. And the Reds are in the thick of a wild card battle. So much so that we talked to Reds insider Charlie Goldsmith in the first hour of the show, and he says this is the most optimistic the fan base has been in years, and this was the most excited they have been at the trade deadline in years. So now, a game that was supposed to be about the Braves and Acuna and Harris and Riley is now about Ellie De La Cruz and the Reds, because they've earned it. Quite frankly, there's no way around it, folks. This isn't bad luck. This is merit. The focus and the story of the game will be about two things: how the Reds are overachieving and the Braves are massively underachieving. That's what you have right now. A tale of two teams. I made the joke again in the 4 o'clock hour when we got underway. If I told you one of these teams would be fighting in the middle of a playoff race right now, and the other one would be closer to 20 games under 500. If I polled, 1,000 people, 995 of them would have said the Braves. Maybe a couple of Reds fans in that mix that would have stuck up for their home team. I mean, all you have to do is go back to the beginning of the year. The Dodgers, the Yankees, and your Atlanta Braves were the three best teams that had the best odds to make the World Series in the beginning of the year. And now, again, it's not all their fault. You can't predict injury. You can't put yourself out there in the way that the Braves have with all of their pieces missing and expect to get, you know, a result maybe slightly better than the one that you've gotten, but not drastically better. So here we are. And it's just so poetic and so fitting that on a night that was supposed to be about the celebration of baseball, celebration of the Braves, celebration of one of the best teams in the sport historically and recently. And now there's a rain delay. You can't make it. It's just, it's so perfect. It's so perfect. The gray cloud, literally and figuratively, continues to follow the Atlanta Braves in 2025. And yeah, when I get home, I'll turn it on. I'll watch an inning or two just to see what it looks like, because it does look really cool. If you haven't seen the Speedway in the park, especially go look at a video from a day or two ago before it was rainy and cloudy. It looks awesome. But all is lost when it comes to the flavor, the spice, the anticipation of this game. It's just another game. And nobody in their right mind thought it was going to be, right? Nobody in their right mind thought this was going to be just another game for the Braves. Another game where they'll blow a 9-run lead with their bullpen. Another game where the offense will score a run in the first inning and then go dormant for the next 8 innings. Another game where you don't have a shortstop to speak of. Michael Harris, maybe he can continue to make something of himself to close out shop here for the season. Maybe Riley and Olsen can get hot and put up more representative numbers than what they have. And who knows about Acuna? I know I had a lot of y'all yelling at me on Twitter the other night because I said there's zero reason that man should see another pitch for the Braves in 2025. And I get it. There's logistical things that get in the way. Because Players Association and all arbitration and all that stuff, time MLB, time accrued, you want all those things in your back pocket. I get it. But I also don't care. That dude should not see another pitch this season. He's too important. He's everything to the franchise. And if he wants his $600 million deal, he's also not going to play winter ball. That's over. That part of his career is in the rearview mirror. And that's the end of it. If he wants to maximize his value to the organization, and if he wants to be treated in kind by the organization, some changes need to be made, including DH. I think next year you're going to see a three-pronged approach to DH. It'll be whoever isn't catching. So Murph or Baldwin, and then the other day is Acuna. And I think that's going to be the formula, at least for next year. You don't need to go out and replace Ozuna with a full-time DH. You have a trifecta of guys that combine for as good as any DH in the sport. But Acuna needs to play DH consistently next year. Because he can't do it. He can't. He clearly cannot do it. Is there a chance he goes the next 10 years of his career and never misses another significant portion of a season? There absolutely is, and I hope for that like nothing you could ever imagine. But is that likely? Is that likely what happens? No, it's not. Two catastrophic knee injuries. His lower extremities are just predisposed to injury. That's what we've seen. And it's not like he's out of shape. It's not like he's, taxing himself in ways that he shouldn't. He's the best athlete in the sport in terms of doing everything. Hitting, running, throwing, all that stuff. He's the best athlete in the sport when you talk about individual skill sets. It was Mike Trout, and unfortunately the same thing happened to him. He got run over by injuries the last few years. He hasn't been the same. He was Ronald Acuna Jr. for the better part of a decade until he wasn't. And we are desperately trying for that not to happen with Ronnie. But I get it. You can't predict injury. You can't avoid injury. Meaning if he's on the field, he knows. That's what I was joking about the other night. He has one gear, guys. One. 100%. Like, I was joking. The joke I made, E, the other night was, it's not like when he's ready to come back, Brian Snicker, Double A, Tim Hires, everybody's going to be sitting in a room with him, and they bring him in, and they're like, Ronnie, okay, here's the deal. We're going to put you back in the lineup, but you got to promise me you're only going to go 70%. You got to promise. And okay. You know what he does? He gets up out of the chair, and he walks out of the room laughing.
Well, or he says in the Spanish, no comprende.
No comprende.
No comprende, boss.
Yeah, señor, no comprende.
Yeah.
He knows one speed. It's 100%. Yeah. That's how Ronald Acuña Jr. plays the game. And we don't want it any other way, but unfortunately, when he does it, he gets hurt.
Yeah. Well, let's let him be DH, and let's implement a rule that when he gets on first base, like they did with Babe Ruth back in the day, hey, courtesy runner, can we do that? I mean, can I get a high school rule?
But the problem is, not only is it not a courtesy runner, he scores from first regularly. So he's going, again, 100%. That's the only speed he knows. And that's what makes him one of the best to ever wear a baseball mitt and hold a bat. But it also is what makes him injury prone. And at this point in his career, it's hard to argue that he's not. He's hurt again. A calf, I said it again the other day. If you have any of the following injuries, they're annoying, they linger, and they're easy to re-injure. Calf, oblique, hamstring, quad, Achilles. Those are the worst injuries you can have if you're an athlete who's high speed and high energy like he is, because they just linger. They keep popping up every couple of months. Like, oh, there's that calf again. Ronnie's got to miss a couple of games. You got to let it rest for a really long period of time before he's 100% again. But they won't have to worry about that because there's no baseball in October. There's no baseball in October this year for the Braves. Nope, they'll be starting their vacation after that after the 27th out of the 162nd game. They're on to the Bahamas or wherever they're going. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. Appreciate Super Producer E. Fun segments talking Hall of Fame, Falcons True False. Appreciate all my guests stopping by and appreciate everybody who checked in on Twitter at CT Tonight 929. Let's see if the Five Stripes can get a win in League's Cup. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Five Stripe Countdown starts in 5 minutes. Sports Radio 929 The Game, Odyssey app.